Crap, crap, mega crap. I'll give you 200 bucks for all of them.
That seems a little low.
Take them somewhere else then.
Sir, your wife says the tile you ordered for the foyer is out of stock.
Fella, we just put a rug there. Sit down. Give me that. I'll give you 300. That's a standard freelance fee. Tear up page one, run that photo instead.
Deadline?
Spider-Man, hero or menace? Exclusive Daily Bugle photos.
Menace? He was protecting that armor.
I'll tell you what, Atticus. You take the pictures, I'll make up the headlines, okay? All right? That okay with you?
Yes, sir.
Goody.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 93 for the 8th of July, 2012. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm fantastic, Dave.
That's good.
I'm also hearing my own voice.
Are you? I'm loving it. Oh, really? I can't hear that at all.
It's fine. I'm sure it's...
You sound spectacular.
I know. I can tell. I can hear it. It's quite fantastic.
We are also joined by our ever-faithful Richard Gray. How are you, Richard?
All the better for hearing Josh's voice.
Because it's spectacular.
It's
mine
real
may be spectacular,
and spectacular,
but I...
Oh, we've lost somebody.
No, wait. May be spectacular,
No.
Oh, sorry.
I'm still here. I'm
we
still
lost
here.
You for a second. I may be spectacular, but...
He's just saying he's got a spectacular butt, and I agree with him.
Well, thank you very much, Richard. I have missed your dry monotone voice that is only... and always suitable for radio.
Oh.
I'll take that in the manner that it was offered.
It starts early, people. It starts early. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. Round one. Ding!
Man, I would kill for that voice. What are you talking about? I don't have a radio voice like that. This guy can pull off like old-time radio sounds. I can't do that.
And like I said, I'd kill for your butt as well. So I propose a student exchange program.
We'll see. We'll see. I think we should come back to that later when we've actually finished, you know.
Sorry, what? You want a student's butt? What?
Gotcha. This has descended into madness earlier.
This week we are going to be reviewing the new rebooted, reimagined, remade, whatever we're going to call it, because we've run out of re's, The Amazing Spider-Man. What is it, 9-10 years after the original? Let's do a reboot. What the hell? And let's do an origin story at the same time. Why? We'll talk about more of that later on. We're also got a little bit of Josh's Bargain Basement. We've got a little bit of Josh's Bargain Basement. Oh, ba-dum-bum. And we have a brand new list of five. Five of our favorite villains, because no hero is complete without a good villain. So that's our show. That's it. Da-da-da-da-da. Good night, folks. All right.
We should probably tell people about what we thought about those things.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's what we do on this show, isn't it? Alrighty. But we like to start this show, as always, with a roundup of the other things that we watch throughout the week. So I'm going to say, Richard Gray, what have you been watching this week?
Apart from Josh's butt, I have been watching...
There it goes again.
Yeah, it's basically going to be the butt of a joke for the rest of the year.
To puns, really?
Yeah, it looks that way.
Last week you said we should be more free with the puns, and I'm just experimenting.
Fair enough.
All right, in more ways than one, it seems.
Back to what we've been watching, Richard.
Apart from the movie that we're reviewing this week, I also saw a movie called Hysteria.
Oh, yes.
Which is basically a period rom-com about the invention of the vibrator.
Oh, I want to see it.
Yeah, it's all right. It's pretty much one joke. It's got Maggie Gyllenhaal in it. It's got our friend Felicity Jones in it.
Oh, it sounds like a good cast so far.
It's got Hugh Dancy in it. It's all right. It's not bad. I mean, it's a bit twee. It might rub people the some wrong way, but it's got some good vibrations.
Oh, I would not have said that. Oh. I just want to remind people we do carry an explicit tag on this show.
Yes. Well, I mean, it's kind of it's a bit like a mashup. You know, it's kind of got that, you know, Jane Austen meets vibrator origin story feel to it. So it could be like a It's almost like Seth Graham Smith has been let loose on it. So it's like Sibian's Insensibility or something. I don't know.
Oh, no. It's getting worse by the minute. Did you see anything else? Get me away from this.
Oh. I saw another movie, and actually this is taking it right down. I saw a documentary last night called The Interrupters, which is about
about people crying. Walking in on the people using the first vibrators.
Oh, I'm sorry. didn't see you there, old sport. No, it's actually a really good documentary about crime in Chicago and murder, and this group of people who are actually there about interrupting potential violence on the street. They're violence interrupters. So if an argument is escalating, it looks like people are about to start, beating into each other or killing each other, they actually want to head off violence. Or if someone gets shot, they actually go around and mediate with the gang members or the families or whatever and say, look, if you go off and shoot this other guy, he's just going to shoot someone of your friend, and this is going to be going on for years. You want this to happen.
And these people and actually exist?
Sorry?
These people actually exist?
These people actually exist, and they've reduced, serious crime in this particular area by as much as 40%. So, it's actually a fascinating documentary. It goes on a little bit too long, but it's playing at a couple of film festivals at the moment. So, well worth a look if you see it, particularly given that it's actually just a really interesting subject.
Sounds very interesting. Anything else?
Look, that'll do for this.
That'll
week.
Do. Josh, what have you been watching?
Oh, me. Well, look, I've watched the obvious one, which we'll talk about, and then the one that we're going to review. But other than that, I've just kind of been digging through the last of what's sort of sitting around in my DVD collection. It's been a really sad week because I have to report, guys, my Blu-ray player has died.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And what's worse is it's also the PS3, so it's one half of my gaming capacity as well.
Oh, my God.
Very, very unhappy because this happened as I was trying to watch John Carter on Blu-ray.
Oh.
So very unhappy with that. But thank God it came with a digital copy, as all good films should. And I also bought in the same transaction The Artist on Blu-ray as well.
Oh, I want to see that again.
Oh, dude. Look, it's still fantastic.
Wow. I think it would look the black and white would look fantastic.
I'm just dude, forget the DVD, man. I just can't wait to sit down and watch all of the special features on both. The John Carter set that comes at the moment, you get the film and then you get the a second Blu-ray just for more special features.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
And I was like, yes, that is a win. I will take that.
I'm glad they've done that because, they could have just easily just stuck it out as a bare bones thing.
Yeah, it's funny that you actually watched John Carter because I also rewatched John Carter this week. And I actually really enjoyed it a second time around. It was a lot of fun. I did notice a few problems with it, though. It's interesting watching it a second time because I started to notice that the pacing in the first half is actually very slow.
Definitely.
It actually picks up a lot halfway through, and once it gets really kicking, it's a lot. It's kind of a roller coaster ride. But yeah, noticing the pacing problems in the first half, but still like it. I still don't think it deserved what it got.
Definitely.
Anything else, Josh? I know you've been Blu-rayless, so.
Yeah, I've got a few that I've kicked around. I mean, I watch Black Rain.
You watch Black Rain? It's not in the bargain basement, is it?
No, it's not.
Okay.
I'm not doing that one because I actually found myself starting to enjoy it at the halfway mark.
I actually didn't hate Black Rain. It's not a great film, but I didn't hate it. It's got some good moments in it. I just don't think it's really worthy of Ridley Scott a la that era.
Oh, definitely. It definitely started off a lot worse. Like it savored itself a lot of points in the first sort of 20 minutes after that terrible bike race. Where I'm like, you don't know how to bike race, Michael Douglas. Don't try and pretend. You're not hardcore. But the thing is that as the character started to grow, I actually started to really like him because he's just so browbeaten. Like no character I've ever seen. Like this guy doesn't just have the family issues or whatever. It's like he has the family issues. The cops hate him. You know, everybody on the streets wants him dead. I'm just looking at this dude going, how do you even sleep at night? But anyway, I watched that and I rewatched Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
Oh, how'd that hold up to a second viewing?
Oh, man, you know what? It was as tragic as it was the first time. But you know what? I like having it around because it's just one of those films that I just look at and I'm like, it's the perfect blank out film. Put it on in the background and you never need to concentrate on it. Like, not even once. Because if you can hear the dialogue, it's telling you what's going on anyway. So, yeah, no, a win in my books. And then, of course, there was one more.
Ah, well, hold off on that one. Let me just give you one more of mine, and then we'll go straight into that section. So I watched John Carter as well, which we've already talked about. But I also watched last night. We kind of had just a hankering in here in the household. I'm not sure what even brought it on. But we watched Star Trek First Contact. With the Borg Queen and the Borgs and Picard losing his shit. And it's a lot of fun, that film. It holds up really well. I just thought I'd bring that up. So I think it's a really good film for those who are into or not into Star Trek. And that's actually a big call. Because it's just a fun action film as well. With some really good moments in it. And Alice Krieg as the Borg Queen is awesome. Yeah. I forgot how good she was. But Josh, I think we need to go downstairs for a minute.
All right, cool.
Good evening, and welcome to Josh's Bargain Basement.
We're going to have to get that fixed, because every time he goes downstairs, that theme song blows.
I know. Like, I've looked for the button and everything and the wiring. There's just nothing there. It's like something actually creepy is just going on.
And I want to know who that guy is living in your basement.
Yeah, that disembodied voice that lives down.
There's a lot of things we probably have to clean up down there. But one of the things I found while I was
down there.
Oh, don't
tell me about your personal problems.
No, seriously, though. One of the things that I did find while I was down there was a film. You can find it on Amazon for $13.99 or something, which is basically where we got it from. This film, it was a strange film for me to get, but I have an obsession with 80s horror. We all know this. I'm not going to lie.
No, of course, we all do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But this film kind of is cheating because it's set in the 80s. It's shot like it's in the 80s. Everything is 80s about it, but it was made in 2009.
Hey! How's that work?
And watching it, you're very aware of that. The film is called The House of the Devil, and it was made in 2009, and it's this bizarre film about a girl that goes to babysit at a house. And I think the thing that I found weird about this film is that it works for pretty much three quarters of the film, to the point where I got to the three quarter mark and I was asking myself, should I keep watching? Yeah, I might as well. It's intriguing. Should I keep watching? Like every 5 minutes from that point on, I was asking the question. But before that, I hadn't questioned it once, because this film is based on true events, or, you know, like probably none of them are actually true. Like, a girl went to babysit, and that's the original story, and then they just tacked the rest onto it, or at least that's how it feels. But the story follows this young girl who is basically trying to rent a house. She's just found this wonderful house that she wants to move into, and she essentially can't afford it.
Right.
And she's already said she's going to be able to make the first payment. So she, rushes for emergency tactics and decides she's going to do some babysitting. And so she's at university, as all good teenage horror victims are, and essentially basically goes to the board and rips off a number and calls this guy. No answer, calls her back really creepily and asks to meet her somewhere. He never shows up. Now, later on in the film, he contacts her again, and at this stage, as the viewer, you're going, look, just from watching lots of horrors, this is a really bad idea. But the thing is that it keeps getting worse and worse. Like, she gets out to this house and speaks to this old man who's nice, if not incredibly disturbing, just by proxy. Like, really well-acted idea. Like, as a character, he essentially is this weird older man that's very kind, very softly spoken, but obviously has some serious mental issues. And essentially, as she goes through talking with this man, and this isn't all plot stuff, this is all the setup for the film, she essentially finds out that she's been mildly tricked and that she's not there to babysit a child. She's there to babysit his mother while he goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the setup to the film. And essentially, he's like, don't bother going upstairs. She'll be fine. All I need you to do is sit down here and watch TV. And this takes a long time to play out because the house is very creepy and the shot works very creepy. Like, they set up a really don't do it, don't go in there kind of a mentality in your head from the moment that she arrives at the house. And by the time that they leave, the husband and wife leave the house, all of a sudden you're really wondering what's going to happen and where they're going to go with this. The problem that I had is from there, it just becomes a diabolical diarrhea mess. and it just literally falls apart. Like,
I was actually sitting there thinking for a minute there that you actually had me. It sounded interesting.
I know. And this is the problem with the film. I'm being very clear with this because this is my problem entirely. I was enjoying this and then it just fucking falls apart. It's in the worst kind of ways because they even continue to use some really good scenes and some really good use. Like, one of my favorite horror cliches that people use is where people are using headphones and then they rip them off or they get knocked off or something like that. And you get that amazing immersion of sound where everything just comes back. Yeah. You know, it's like are you in a happy, safe place? You're all of a sudden not happy and not in a safe place. And this is kind of how it feels in this film. They do a lot of those kind of tricks. But then sort of as you get towards where it ends, all of a sudden they just throw – it's no longer red herrings. They just don't even bother to try and like give you any clues.
What's the title of this film again?
It's called The House of the Devil.
I've seen this film on the shelves, and what you're describing is not what I saw on the shelf.
Oh, dude, and when you get to the final bit and you actually see what all the horror is about, because with a horror like this, one of the biggest crimes that they commit is they wait right to the end to really drop any gore, violence, or any real scares on you. Like, they do the stupid scares, like, when? Kind
of hits. How's that go again?
I'm not doing it. You guys have a sound on your soundboard for that.
Yeah, Richard does.
Oh, hang on, sorry. Did you set me up again, Josh?
One, two, three.
That's so the one.
Yeah, there's a lot of those kind of scares, but when you actually get to the final moments where things start to break down and everything kind of comes out and happens, it happens in an incredibly short time with a lot of violence out of nowhere and then sort of just, you know, 5 minutes of her running around screaming and then essentially you've got a plot reveal and the film's over. This is not the way you do a horror at all, and I'm very disappointed to say that this is not worth renting or buying.
Ooh, that's a mighty slam. Richard, have you seen this?
No, I haven't. But the director, Ty West, I'm sort of familiar with his stuff, and he does a lot of this retro kind of stuff. In fact, I was just looking at the entry to the movie on Wikipedia. The poster's done as a 80s style poster. If I recall correctly, they actually released it on VHS when it came out as well.
Yeah, it comes as a double pack, I think, online. I didn't get it because, I mean, seriously, who the fuck needs a VHS?
No, exactly.
And if the film's bad, I've just got a VHS of a film I'd never want to watch. And thank God I was right about making that decision.
But the dude who directed it's gone on to do two other films, and all of them have been kind of acclaimed, or not, you know, got a bit of thing. This actually got really good reviews, but he also did The Innkeepers after that, which I haven't seen, but I've heard really good things about.
I've heard good things about that one.
And there's one coming out this year called VHS, and I really love the
poster. Oh, did he do VHS? I've been reading about this.
Yeah, and it's like the poster looks really cool. It's like a whole stack of videotapes, and the labels form a skull.
What is it with horror film producers at the moment making films about basically inanimate objects? We've got ATM coming out soon. We got VHS coming out soon.
Oh, did I mention that I had actually seen that? Because if I didn't, it's shit and no one should watch it.
Is this ATM?
Yes.
Oh, you finally saw it. Okay.
Fucking tragic. Like, like at the end, you know where you've got films where you're kind of disappointed and films like this where you're like, oh man, that could have been something. And then you've got films where by the three-quarter mark, in the last 20 minutes, you're just yelling at your TV. You're like, oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, that's just dumb. Oh, you can't be serious. And we would, both me and Celine were just doing that for the entire rest of this.
I want to go over and watch movies at Josh's house. It sounds like fun. Dude,
you've got to, man. Seriously, sometimes our neighbors must think we are crazy.
Although I got to say, actually.
I'm good to be kidding.
Although I've got to say, I did watch Troll 2 with you and Selena. That was fun.
Oh, man. That popped up on, I think it was iTunes recently under the recommended for you, and I just literally fell over. I was just like, that recommended for me? Fuck you. You Don't tell me to watch that film.
Oh. I saw one of the Mega Shark type films with Josh and Celine, and that was an experience. Oh, I think we also watched Battle of Los Angeles, didn't we?
Oh, yes. Now, that was a hard night, man. Look, I'm sorry that the one time you've come over and watched films with us, it was just utter trash, because that was some heavy stuff.
Oh, that's the night you guys watched Sharktopus, isn't it?
Yes, Sharktopus, that was the
one. Well, Sharktopus is good fun, though.
Yeah, it balanced out Battle of Los Angeles.
Yeah, I kind of wish we had watched it the other way around now, because it would probably have been a lot easier on me than trying to sit through that film.
Oh, dear. Well, can we leave the basement now?
Absolutely.
That film is making me feel icky. I think we need to leave the basement.
Dude. Wait, did you guys just hear that?
Yeah, what?
I swear to God, somebody put something down here. There is some creepy stuff. This is what happened. That's it. I'm getting the fuck out of here.
I'm leaving the basement.
Would you close the door?
All right. Out of there. All right. Let's talk about another big film that could or could not be seen as crap. No. I don't know. We haven't reviewed it yet. So we'll review it together and we'll see how we go. The film this week is The Amazing Spider-Man. Which,
hey, I'm amazing.
And I'm going to start all of this by saying something that I talked about on panels, and I actually have the exact quote in front of me. So before I read you anything about this film, I think this sums it up perfectly. David Stratton on At the Movies this week actually reviewed this film, and his opening sentence was, and this is word perfect to him, "The film is perfectly satisfactory. But there's a profound sense of deja vu." So if everything I'm about to say in the next few minutes sounds very familiar, there is a reason for that. And we're going to say The Amazing Spider-Man is the story of Peter Parker, an outcast high schooler who was abandoned by his parents as a boy, leaving him to be raised by his Uncle Ben and Aunt May. Like most teenagers, Peter is trying to figure out who he is and how he got to be the person he is today. Now, if this all sounds very long-winded, by the way, Sony wrote this, all right? As Peter discovers a mysterious briefcase that belonged to his father, he begins a quest to understand his parents' disappearance. And at this point, I'm just going to say, turn into Spider-Man already!
Yeah, David, I've got to say,
my spider senses are starting to tingle.
Absolutely. Leading him directly to Oscorp in the lab of Kurt Connors, his father's former partner. As Spider-Man is set on a collision course with Connors' alter ego, the Lizard, Peter will make life-altering choices to use his powers and shape his destiny to become a hero. And that's courtesy of Sony. Can I point out that nowhere in there they talk about him turning into Spider-Man? It's this long-ass thing about being a teenager and angst and his parents, and then it goes, as Spider-Man.
That's the thing. I think that's probably one of the problems of the film. The actual turning into Spider-Man thing is actually a bit of an afterthought.
It kind of is. So we are talking about The Amazing Spider-Man, directed by Mark Webb. It is written by James Vanderbilt. Now, how do you say it? Vanderbilt? Vanderbilt? It's got an I-L-T. Yeah. It's
Vanderlei Industries.
Vanderlei Industries. Alvin Sargent, Steve Kloves, and the story by James Vanderbilt as well, based on, of course, the Stan Lee and Steve Ditko Marvel comic book. This time around, because it is a reboot, we are starring Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, Rhys Ifans, who I always love Rhys Ifans, but I just don't know if... this whole film, I'm not sure. Dennis Leary, Martin Sheen, Sally Field. Who else is in this? Any note? Anybody? Ambeth Davids is in it. C. Thomas Howell apparently makes an appearance. I don't even remember seeing him.
Yeah, I think he might be the father. No, that's C. Thomas Howell. No, there's also the dude who plays the father somewhere.
Campbell Scott. Campbell Scott.
Oh, you mentioned him, didn't you?
Yeah, Campbell Scott. Chris Zilka, who I actually had a chance to interview for Shark Night, is here.
Did he play
Flash Thompson? Oh, Richard's on the soundboard tonight. All right.
I'll put it away now.
No. Don't put it away. It's fun. All right. So let's have a listen to this trailer, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about this.
How did you get out there?
Fire escape.
It's 20 stories.
The doorman's intimidating.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Parker.
Not much to tell, really.
Peter lives with his aunt and uncle. Did you catch that spider guy yet?
No, but we will. This guy wears a mask like an outlaw.
I think he's trying to do something maybe the police can't.
Can't?
You know, if you're gonna steal cars, don't dress like a car thief.
You a cop?
You seriously think I'm a cop? In a skin tie, red and blue suit.
Who are you?
I know it's been rough for you, Peter. I forgot all about that thing. It was your dad's.
Your father was a very secretive man, Peter.
Dr. Connors, I'm Richard Parker's son.
Your father and I were going to change the lives of millions, including mine. Extraordinary. How did you come up with this?
There's a rumor of a new species in New York. It can be aggressive if threatened.
I gotta stop him, because I created him.
That's not your job.
Maybe it is.
Thirty-eight of New York's finest versus one guy in a unitard. Woo!
If you want the truth, Peter, come and get it.
I am issuing an arrest warrant for the masked vigilante known as Spider-Man.
I'm in trouble.
Like to kick this one off, if that's okay, guys.
That's fine. I'm going last.
Okay. I'm going to say that I actually completely agree with David Stratton, which is a very rare thing for me to do, but I completely agree. It is a completely satisfactory film. It is, you know, it's got action and it's got the characters and it's got the origin story and it's got this. I just all the way through it just kept thinking it was a vague sense of every time the filmmakers wanted to do something, went, do you know what would be cool? Oh, Raimi did that. And I kept getting that all the way through the film. It kept feeling like they kept stopping short because Raimi had already covered this territory and they were just already treading water. That being said, the web-swinging stuff was fantastic. I thought all the actors actually gave a fairly good performance. I felt that Reese Ifans was actually kind of sleepwalking just a little bit. He's capable of so much more. Dennis Leary was basically just doing shtick. This is what Dennis Leary does. But I thought Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone were both great. I actually bought the chemistry between them. I mean, she's just radiant and he's a lot of... There was a certain nervous energy from Andrew Garfield that I really liked. I thought he really captured that whole Parker awkwardness and he did that quite well. I was actually very impressed with Martin Sheen and Sally Field. I thought I was going to hate them. And because all the way through the casting process, I kept thinking they're going to be, Ben and May. But I actually quite like them. I thought there was a really nice relationship between Parker and his aunt and uncle. I just kept feeling like this film is a retread, and it was a bit of a problem being a retread. Now, that being said, I actually really liked the first half of this film, which is actually the kind of the pre-Spider-Man stuff, because I thought that they took their time and I actually liked the relationships with Parker and his classmates and Emma Stone. And you know, we saw, you know, his development of a character trying to find out about his father, and they took their time about it. The only problem with that is that I felt the second half was rushed. I thought that they spent so much time setting up character, they didn't give enough time to actually be Spider-Man. Anyway, what do you think? Who wants to go next? Richard, you want to go next?
I think it was more that Josh wanted to go last.
Well, that's true.
so by default, I go next. Look, I agree with a lot of what you said, David. I think there was a much longer film in here, perhaps originally, even though it was quite long to start with. Just by virtue of the fact that listening to that trailer again, I noticed there was a few deleted scenes that didn't make it in there.
Well, if you remember, one of the big scenes they actually released onto the internet, which was like one of the advanced scenes, was him and the doorman.
Yeah, exactly.
Which wasn't even in the film.
That was a comic throwaway scene, but I think there's a lot of stuff with the Khan character. Ratha character played by Irfan Khan. He's the guy that's working in the lab with.
Oh,
Reese
yes,
Ifans.
Yes, yes.
There's a line in the trailer there, or one of the trailers, where he says something to Peter like, you know. You'll never know the truth, or you want to know something about the truth or something. So to me, it indicates that there was probably a longer exposition-y scene in that.
I think we're getting an extended cut on Blu-ray.
Yeah, no, I don't imagine for a minute that we won't get that. Look, you know, I'll agree with you. Look, the in terms of what they did visually with this film, this is, of course, the first 3D Spider-Man. I don't think part three was 3D, was it? No. This is the first 3D Spider-Man, and I think they've used the medium to its full extent. I think the web-slinging stuff, particularly there's a big climactic scene where he's swinging across the city, looks fantastic.
Also, just on that note, I actually really like the fact that they've made this web-swinging more awkward this time. So it's much more parkourish. So there's lots of him swinging and then running up walls or jumping across fire escapes in between swings. Mm. And I actually really like that. I really like that kind of freneticness to it.
You know, like, I mean, I think that the real strength of this film for me was the two leads and the way they interplayed with each other. So Stone and Garfield work really, really well together. There's a really great chemistry there. There's that awkward kind of to and, you know, back and forth that Mark Webb did so well in 500 Days of Summer. Mm. They work really well, even though they're meant to be 17, and there's no way in hell that they're pulling off 17 in that film.
Especially, I mean, her.
There's actually a line where Emma Stone comes out and says, "No, really, for God's sake, Dad, you know, I'm 17, really." like, "No, you're not. You're 24. It's like, you know, I found that all. I mean, you know, I think, you know, in the comics, certainly at the moment, they're doing this whole thing where they've really made Spider-Man much younger, and they've gone back, you know, and it's just certainly in the Ultimate line anyway. Because a lot of the joy of this film, and half the reason they're doing this, is to give that whole awkward teenager dealing with teenage problems but also being a superhero thing again. I mean, that's kind of what they wanted to do here. But the thing is, with this film, and this is where you said that the second half of the film got awfully rushed, because this isn't just this isn't just Spider-Man's origin story, it's also the Lizard's origin story, it's also a bit of Peter Parker's parents' past.
And say that
four times quickly.
can we also talk absolute cliche, though? The idea where he goes, "I have to stop him because I made him."
Yeah.
You know, it's how many times have we had this old nugget?
That's the thing. I mean, like, you know, I think that the problem is with superhero films, and Batman films have managed to avoid this with their villains for the most part, is that there seems to be, and it seems to be singular to the Spider-Man films as well, there seems to be this obsession that the origin of that character has to be simultaneous with the origin of the villain as well. And it's like, that's not how it works in the comics. The villain is created elsewhere. Mm. But because of the compressed format of film, they have to make those two origin stories work together. So you've got to get those. Like, you're basically introducing two major characters at the same time.
Which is kind of why Spider-Man 2 works so well. Spider-Man is established. Exactly. And then we have Octopus come along, you know?
Which again begs the question: why do the origin story again when you can also need to introduce the Lizard? This concept of Peter Parker's parents' past, you know, you've got to
say that one four times fast.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got to introduce all of that. You've got to do the whole origin story, but being a bit of a thing. This extra element of Gwen Stacy and Oscorp and all that sort of stuff. An additional element with Dennis Leary's character.
And you know,
well,
at its core, Spider-Man is actually a very simple origin story, and they really keep just trying to complicate it.
Mm, and I just found it, look, honestly, I didn't find here I go again, Peter Parker's parents' past intriguing enough I didn't actually find that past. I mean, it's just it's a spy thing. Ooh, they're spies. Look what's, you know, look at they're spying. Look, they're doing it. They're spying again. They're spied. it's, you know, I didn't find that, like, that interesting, to be honest. And also, and I hate to say this, the Lizard is not a cinematic villain. I didn't find him as interesting as he should be. I mean, Rhys Ifans is normally very good, but he's working with very slender material here.
And that's not to say the CG wasn't fantastic. I mean, the Lizard looks great, you know.
Don't get me wrong. Everything visual about this film, fantastic. Mm. But I don't know. There was just something I just didn't find. And then because of that, it just sort of falls into this other film where it's kind of a little bit Rise of the Planet of the Apes ending, where they're fighting on the bridge. And let's get some really cool stuff there. I don't know. I never got engaged with that villain Spider-Man face-off. And actually, you're right, that the stuff that I found more interesting was the stuff leading up to him becoming Spider-Man. I should say, though, as a massive comics fan, perhaps the reason I find this boring is because I've been there before, you know, 7,000 times.
Yeah.
I know this story so well. Perhaps to a new audience, that wouldn't be the case. But then again, they are making a new Spider-Man film less than a decade since the last time they told this origin story, and half that time since, you know, emo musical Spider-Man.
Yeah, and I think you summed it up in Behind the Panels this afternoon when you actually said it should have been done Incredible Hulk style, which is, yeah, okay, yeah, we reboot it basically, but we show the origin basically during the opening credits and we're in and we're done. Yeah. You know, we don't need to actually show the whole origin again. Josh, your turn.
Well, it's interesting because I disagree with both of you.
Oh, good.
I actually really, really like
this.
Oh,
that's good, Dave. Let's just move it.
Look, the main reason I enjoyed this a lot more was I was actually on board for the origin story because, to be honest, I've felt since 3 there has been a bit of hate for Spider-Man in my soul ever since 3. Because I just felt that that series had not only, this felt like the end of Happy Days to me. Like when we got to Spider-Man 3, Sam Raimi didn't care, the actors were too old, the fucking setup didn't work, and I was like, you know what, I don't want any of this anymore, and I want this to start all over again. And that's why when this film came along, I was on board because I wanted to see a different kind of Spider-Man, and that's what I got. I mean, you guys are talking about deja vu. I actually felt the complete opposite. His parents, I don't know where the secret agent thing came from. I don't know. Maybe because I'm not enough of a comic book fan. I don't understand why that is apparently a thing, because at no stage does it really show me that they were secret agents. They were just people that had to run away due to something. That was the only
it's the
bit
weird,
I got out
it's
of
the
story
weird
line.
Retrofitting of the origin that came up in the Spider-Man comic books over the 90s. The 90s were a dark era.
But are we sure that that's the case? Like, they don't actually in any way make that statement.
No. When I say the secret agent thing, I mean, there's the whole... They were intimating that they were deep into something that they had...
Oh, well, they explained regeneration, man. The reason that they had to leave was because they knew what... The actual outcome of using that particular research would have done. So that's why they left.
Well,
I mean, that's
I'll save further comments to the spoiler section.
Oh, no, no, that's cool. Okay, cool. But anyway, not only that, but I actually much prefer the Ben story in this film, because I feel that it's a much more it's much more personal. Like, this to me is him directly responsible for Ben's death.
That's actually a lot more like the comic book as well, with the whole convenience store and everything.
I felt that, like, the whole relationship of putting his family in, not even as a big deal, but including them as a thing, brings him into an actual teenager. Not like the Tobey Maguire teenager, like someone that's angry, somebody that is a little bit willing to do stupid things, like dumb teenager stuff. And I kind of like that, because rebooting it as an origin story, I don't feel like this person's perfect or anything like that. I feel like he's a kid that's got powers and doesn't quite know how to use them yet. I still think that everything you guys have brought up is absolutely right. I think the third act of this film, and from then on, basically starts to fall very flat on its face. You're right, it's rushed incredibly. I agree. I don't think the Lizard is a very good character to put on screen, because especially with this, he just looks like he's got a round head. Like, there's nothing lizardy about his face at all, in my opinion. But on top of that, I think that you're right. Oh, man, Dennis Leary, bad casting.
I like Dennis Leary, but he's just doing Dennis Leary. There's nothing special about him.
It's that schlockiness. You're right. It's that just horrible. He's like Jonah Jameson without the fun. You know?
Hey,
I mean?
There you go. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. He's just a mean-spirited, angry man that turns around at the end or whatever. And, you know, like, it's just typical comic book shit, but not handled well at all.
You know what? Actually, you mentioned Jay Jonah. I think the movie needed a little bit of that, because there wasn't a lot of levity in the film.
No.
I seriously miss Jay Jonah Jameson.
Well, the film took itself too seriously. And, I mean, Raimi hams it up sometimes, you know, and he's got the ham in there. And in the scenes with Jay Jonah always had Raimi's brother as well.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but, you know, and so there was that real ham-fisted kind of thing there. But it was fun. You needed that when Spider-Man's got to go off and, like, fight this guy that's going to kill his friends and family, you know, in the middle of it. You know?
No, I think replacing J. Jonah Jameson with Captain Stacy was a really bad move on their part, because J. Jonah Jameson is in, like, a symbiotic relationship with Spider-Man. You know, there's always been J. Jonah with Spider-Man, because J. Jonah was the one that was turning him into a menace. Otherwise,
at the same time,
Otherwise, this just
is the rebooting for me is the fact that we haven't seen these characters yet. We can bring them out at later stages. And I feel that the film, though not perfect, stands up powerfully enough to be able to reboot it. And I'm interested to see who they bring in next. And I'm interested to see the direction that the Garfield version of Spider-Man goes, because I prefer him. I love his dialogue so much more than I like the Maguire. Like, one line of his dialogue, that line that you see in the trailer where he's like, oh, no, oh my God, you found my one weakness. It's small knives.
Yeah, I love that.
That is better than any dialogue uttered by the Spider-Man Tobey Maguire in any of the films.
No, I totally agree with you. I really liked Andrew Garfield. I thought Andrew Garfield was a great... I quite like Tobey Maguire too, don't get me wrong. But I really thought Andrew Maguire... Andrew Garfield actually did a great job.
Yeah, and this
I'm getting my Peters mixed up.
You're going to end up with Andrew McCarthy in a minute.
I know. And can I just tell you that Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy is far superior to Kirsten Dunst's Mary Jane.
Definitely.
In every way.
Mm.
Sorry, I just had to throw that in.
That's okay. Well, look, apart from that, I think that there's so many things that I like about this film. I like the reboot. I like the relationship between him and Gwen Stacy. I like the fact that for future films going on, we can have a contention between those two characters, which would be for an interesting, you know, relationship. I think that rebooting it for a different age group and something a little bit more angsty all over again, something that feels very teen, is fine with me. I mean, it's not Twilight kind of teen stuff, so I'm on board just for that reason alone. But yeah, look, I really enjoyed this film. I think the New York Loves Spider-Man thing is something I've always had a problem with. So basically from that moment on, I started to switch off. And you guys know what I mean. When you watch the film, you'll understand what I mean.
Yeah, the crane.
But it just felt so driven home, like so camp in a film that was trying to be so serious. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like it didn't sit right at all.
See, that didn't bother me. There was other issues prior to that were getting, that didn't bother me at all. That I quite enjoyed that moment, actually. I thought that was kind of a fun moment. But I had other problems with the ending, which we will go to in spoilers, because I don't want to spoil them.
I'm done. So if we want to go to spoilers.
All right, let's wrap this up and then we'll go into spoilers. Richard, are you going to recommend this to people?
Yeah, look, as I said, I probably sounded really negative when I was doing my rundown, but I actually, like you, I was satisfied with the film and I liked it. So I would recommend it. Yes, absolutely. I said, but just as a fan, there was an incredible sense of disappointment for me.
Yeah, I'm going to say anybody who hasn't seen the original films, absolutely, go for it. If you have seen the other films, be aware you're going to feel like you've seen some of this before. But yeah, look, I sounded harsh. I do like the film. I just don't know if it was needed. That's my issue, is I just don't know if it was actually needed.
Mm.
Not this soon, anyway. And Josh?
I absolutely recommend this film. I think if you can detach yourself, and I mean this with no shit throwing at you guys at all, but if you can detach yourself as the fanboy for a moment and go in knowing that you're going to watch a new film and just pretend that the other ones haven't happened and just watch the film for what it is, not for what you've seen beforehand, and give it a shot and see the differences. See the web-slinging done different. See the visuals done different. See the style done differently. See the characters changed and taken in different directions. And perhaps you might just enjoy yourself.
I just kind of feel like we should have got a discount.
Slightly
used Spider-Man. It's the eBay of Spider-Man movies.
I would say one thing I didn't comment on before is that you all said Garfield is, like, I think might be the definitive Peter Parker.
Oh, I think he's fabulous. Like,
yeah.
No, absolutely. And she's the definitive Gwen Stacy. She's fabulous. You know, the two of them together are absolutely 100% not the issue. they are perfect in their roles. Let's go into a spoiler zone as usual. The spoiler time codes will be in the show notes, so you can check there. It'll only be about, you know, it's usually only between 5 and 10 minutes. Fast forward and you can come back out. If you have seen the film, stick with us. We're just going to talk about a few things, including the ending, that kind of feed our positions on this film. So here we go, into the spoiler zone. All right, so can we talk about a massive logic vacuum to start with? Why on earth would a hardened police captain go up to that roof on his own?
Because he's Dennis fucking Leary.
He would have taken a whole fucking SWAT team with him.
Yeah, look, and this sort of comes to my problem too with it, with the compression of time that this film does. The whole reason that they had him go up to the rooftop alone was so they could kill him off.
Mm-hmm.
So they could do the death of Captain Stacy, so they could lead it up to the death of Gwen Stacy in a possible future.
But they've already blown that because Gwen Stacy cannot know that Parker is Spider-Man.
And that's the thing. She knows. Like, the thing is, by the end of the first film, half of freaking New York knows his secret identity. You know, he's going to need to make a deal with the devil to get out of this, you know?
Sorry, fanboy joke. Now, I was about to say that one of the nuances of this story, this isn't the film, I mean the story in general, is the fact that Gwen Stacy is in love with Parker and hates Spider-Man because Spider-Man she holds responsible for the death of her father. But that doesn't happen in this film. Because
can I just say, though, is this really any different to people complaining about the fact that Spider-Man is black in comic books? Like, I mean, technically, aren't you just saying that you don't like the direction that they've taken?
No, it's
in?
Just,
like,
it's, I'm just, not, it's just an I'm, element of this story because it's a very, very, very dramatic story. We actually just did the death of Gwen Stacy on panels. It's a very it's a very important
Absolutely,
part
but
of
what
that story.
No, take it in that direction.
I see where you're going with this, Josh. No, and I actually agree with you. I don't quibble.
I don't think it's a fair leveling of hate. That's all.
No. It's not a level of hate, but I think it's a problem I had with the. I actually, you're right. It's a directional choice, and I don't particularly care for the direction because I'm wondering where they're going to get the conflict from at that point.
We're going to lose some of the drama from her death because if she doesn't die, let's face it, they've really shot the pooch on this one because she has to die. I mean, that's one of the pivotal moments in Marvel history is Gwen Stacy's death. And the problem is, though, that some of the impact will come out of that death because of the loss of that conflict. And so it's just a matter of storytelling. We've set up this story, and it's so well conceived, that little Shakespearean arc that they created in the comic books, that we've kind of diffused it a little bit now.
I mean, this is the same series that's getting hate leveled at it already, just for the fact that it's a different Spider-Man from the original. So it's
But see, that's changing though, because that's actually Ultimate Spider-Man. People are actually starting to accept him for who he is. That's a completely different universe. Parker's not black or Hispanic in the main Marvel universe. He's still Parker. You know what I mean? And so this is from the main universe, not from the Ultimates universe.
Mm. No. I know that. But this is just what I'm saying. It's like, I think that talking about stuff that I haven't seen happen yet, I mean, it's like, I understand what you mean, man. The death of that definitely is an important part. But what if they don't kill her off? Or what if she just becomes a character?
I will be horribly disappointed.
Gwen Stacy must die.
She must be pushed off a bridge and he must break her neck. It's as simple as that.
No, I totally see what you're saying, Josh. And I actually agree with you. I don't think you can have a go at a film for... Not doing something they haven't talked about doing yet. Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's like, you know, obviously, like, and just because it departs from the book or the comic or, you know, the stage play or whatever it's based on, is not a reason to dislike a film, because often departures, you know, lead to really interesting paths. The problem is, I think that the path that they've chosen to go down instead isn't particularly interesting to me.
Fair enough. Makes sense to me. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's kind of where I'm coming from. He just worded it better. Yeah. I let passion take over.
I think the other thing I wanted to bring up, man, is I think maybe I need to re-explain my problem with the campness of the swinging to the tower, because it's not so much that I have a problem with the concept of New York loves Spider-Man so much. I just don't understand how that could, like, we have a city in fucking chaos. And you've got some dude that apparently gets on a radio and goes, "Hey, Jim, do you want to just swing around the crane for me?" And this dude's going, "I've got 10 fucking lizards around me, dude. No, I won't swing it around." And
I also want to know what all those guys were doing out late, so late night working anyway.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm sure the union would have something to say about that.
Yeah, exactly. But it's just like the fact that they all move in synchronization at the same time. I'm just like, this is just silly. Like, for a film that's so grounded, you know, for a film that isn't going the whole, like, him swinging and death-defying, it's like, it's him being a brawler. Like, he's getting in and up close. He's, you know, wrapping them in web. Like, this is a much more spider-like combat situation. Much more aggressive, much more real. And then just to have this, like, out of nowhere, completely left of field, comic book, you know, sort of sop moment. I was just like, I don't feel like you've earned that. You went in a different direction. You shouldn't have played that card. It feels like it's that felt like the original Spider-Man series.
It did feel really out of place. It felt completely incongruous with the rest of the film. And you're right. When you said about the brawler, I love that scene where he's in really close and he's like pummeling the lizard with webs and wrapping him up and little. That's awesome. That's really cool. I love that. But you're right. It was kind of like, I can't remember which Spider-Man movie it was in, and I think it might have been the second one where they're like holding him aloft like a Christ figure.
Going,
"Don't worry, Spider-Man. We'll keep your secret." It's like, yeah, right.
Yeah, that was on the train in part two. Yeah, I remember.
In part two, Long's already on his cell phone sending pictures.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's be a realistic world for a moment.
On Twitter by the end of the day. Yeah, no.
And because they're going for a different generation, because they've grounded this thing in our time frame, like with the computers and with the cell phone technologies and all this sort of stuff, because we're playing the new world, I just don't feel like that's the kind of thing that you would get out of that situation at all. And I think, was it Dave, I think, was pointing out him going up onto the roof alone?
Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what was that? That
Look,
was
and just silly. Also, I mean, for a guy who basically couldn't stand Spider-Man, he turned on a real dime when he went, okay, go save the world. You know what I mean? It's like, wow, that was easy to win you over. I got two other issues I want to bring up, though. First of all, web shooters. Love the fact that they finally made web shooters and he was using mechanical web shooters. But what the hell is with him mail ordering the web from Oscorp?
You know, the Spider-Man web flu were found all over town. 7,000 crates that they got shipped to this Parker kid. You know?
It's like,
do you think there's a connection?
He sees a top secret experiment and then somehow manages to mail order it. I don't know how that worked. And the other one that I thought was a bit out of place, quite frankly, was how he got bitten. So there's a room of these spiders. So why don't we just create an army of Spider-Man? We're just sending a whole bunch of kids.
Dude. But that was something I was wondering about. Like, because I don't know the entire mythology behind it, I was going, is there a chance for that?
No, in the mythology,
it was mutated evil spiders.
In the mythology, it was one spider. It was a fluke. It was an accident.
Do you know what it could have been? I reckon that they'll set something up like that spider bite would have killed anybody else, but his parents did something to him when he was a kid.
That did occur to me. That did occur to me.
To be fair to the film, they do make a line about that at one stage.
Yeah, exactly.
When he first goes to Connor's house, the guy says something like, all the trials have died so far or something like that. So I think that they were trying to sort of nonchalantly, lightly play that off.
It's a little bit Ang Lee-ish, Hulk-ish. Can I just tell you that? Can I just say it's a little Ang Lee Hulk-ish?
Yeah, yes, that, no, I'm not going to lie about that.
That thought did occur to me.
Well, the other thing I don't buy about that whole lab scenario is the fact that this is Oscorp, which is meant to be the most advanced scientific secret place in the world. And it's like this, let school kids wander around there.
And he gets, you know? And he knocks, and off, and he knocks off the panel in one shot.
Apparently. Because she does well in Midtown Science High.
Well, obviously, that's how you pick your candidates. You don't go to the universities. They're all way too balanced and normal. You just go for the high school kids. They're way easier. And I mean, like, dude, nowadays with technology, every 10-year-old's a goddamn genius.
And I like to point out the fact that the super secret research areas were basically held by the same technology that allows you to open your Android phone. It was one simple little swipe.
Oh, dude, not only do I love the swipe thing, I love the fact that it's like this building of amazing security is basically wired down to the door. So it's like, if you can get past the initial doorway, we don't have any other guards in the whole building. We've just got a whole bunch of people at the front of the store.
Yeah, I think lovely.
That kid was dragged out kicking and screaming because...
And I love the fact that when Parker is in the spider room with all those spiders, he touches one thing and the whole thing shuts down.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, great machinery, guys. He touched one web and the whole thing shut down.
I was waiting for the scene where he played it all like a harp.
I wanted to see him bitten by like 100 of them. That was what I was waiting for. I was like, is this going to be some like a mutant, like he turns into a chrysalis and then births out of it or something?
Now, I would have paid to see that.
I know, because also it would have made more sense because then they all would have died and, you know, then you could have your Spider-Man, but I don't think that would have worked well for the kids.
And since when do spiders die when they bite you?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Do you know? I'm sorry, Dave. How much do you know about nuclear spiders?
Yeah. When was the last time you were bitten by genetically modified?
Wouldn't you
spider?
Like to know?
Seriously, though, I have no idea, Dave.
David goes around biting spiders.
Hey, there you go. I like the fact that there's that one sequence where he builds that web in the sewer. And he watches for the vibrations. I was talking to my lovely wife, Katie, and she goes, yeah, that was kind of cool, but what were they attached to? How far can you actually shoot those webs?
It's like we know that he can shoot to distant buildings. Oh. So to be fair, like if he can hit a building, which is like...
Except he can't hit that crane at the end.
Yeah, no. He's lame.
But also, I love the fact that he had all the cameras there and that he's like a property of Peter Parker written, on the back. He's gone out and bought 6 cameras for the purpose of this thing, gone and actually printed property of Peter Parker on the back of all
put
of them.
Put Dymo labels on them.
And then stuck them to the wall of the sewer. Just in case anybody else was down there and found
them. And what I love is the fact that the lizard picks it off the wall and looks at it like, now, what's the name on this? It's like
there's always a name on the back of these things.
Everybody puts their name on it. All right, you guys got anything else?
Hey, the guy, the shadow guy at the end.
Oh yes, this fucking post-credit sequence. What the hell?
You know what? I kind of
it's Norman Osborn, or
dude, I actually kind of like that for the first time ever. It's not easy enough for people to guess because this does exactly what comic book fans love, which is that you've all just got to speculate. Yeah.
I actually think it was. I personally think it wasn't. I don't think it was. What's his name?
Osborn.
I actually think it was Kurt Connors having a conversation with himself, going crazy. Because he disappears. He just fades back into the shadows.
I think it was Thanos.
Do you know what I think would have been the better, the absolute, the bee's knees, what would have put people on their feet a cheering if they had actually had the credits run and at the end of the credits have a newspaper get slammed and have J. Jonah Jameson basically saying, what is this menace, and set that up for the next
cast him.
And then they could have set that up for the next film though. How good would that have been, and then people would have gone nuts for that. But instead they have this weird... Look, anytime you're in a movie cinema and that happens and everybody just looks at each other at the end and just goes, huh?
it was the same as Avengers. If you weren't... I actually had to go and look up Thanos on the internet
at
the end of
geek
Avengers.
Are you?
I know, but the thing is, I was never a huge Marvel fan. And look, The 7 billion tickets that these films sell aren't just to Marvel geeks.
That's true. But the thing is, you could look up Thanos and find out. There's nothing you can look up for this.
Yeah, that's true.
This was just like, huh?
Shadow guy at end of Spider-Man.
With the wild frizzy hair looking like a weird scientist. Yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's just a bizarro ending to this thing. It's supposed to make you excited for the next one. That doesn't make me excited for the next one. It just makes me go, huh?
Although that said, I am excited for the next one because I think if this is planned as a trilogy, I am actually excited to see where it goes from here.
Oh, me too.
I was just bored getting to that point.
And I mean, look, you learn from your mistakes. I mean, hopefully they'll see the amount of, I wouldn't call it hate, but the amount of sort of like problems people are leveling at scenes. Like even the reviews that like this film. Are still doing that. They're still kind of going, there's a lot wrong with this film. And you can learn from that. You can come back stronger with the second film. Perhaps it'll be better.
Well, Spider-Man 2. Raimi's Spider-Man 2 is better.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Look, I am looking forward to the next one. I'm wondering if they're going to get Mark Webb back again or if they're going to go for a different director. Who knows? I mean, we'll see what happens. There will definitely be a sequel and we'll all be lining up to see it, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get out of the spoiler zone. What do you reckon?
Yeah, Werner Herzog for the sequel.
And can we finish with a Nicholas Winding Refn? Just go for like ultra violent Spider-Man.
I'm in. I want to know if at the end of Werner Herzog's, though, can he have the albino alligators? That's what I want.
Oh, yeah.
He can have whatever the fuck he wants, man. He's Werner fucking Herzog.
And he'll
put it in even if it doesn't make sense.
And he'll narrate the whole thing.
All right, here we go. Let's leave the spoiler zone. All Okay, so I'm glad everybody came back to us. It does get a little bit warm in there. We have some feedback before we go into our list of five. And Richard, it's aimed right at you.
Okay.
It's from our very good friend Mike in Canada. So Josh
may not be a very good friend.
So Josh, it's not aimed at you this time.
Hooray.
Hooray. All right,
I get a week off.
So Mike from Canada says, "Dear Richard, I'm sorry for insulting you and claiming that you only watch six movies all year. I've been listening to the show BT before Thor and know that you are insane and watch a gazillion films a year. And by insane, I mean lucky. It was a tasteless joke. It was a tasteless joke, but not quite as tasteless as your inclusion of Rock of Ages on your best films of 2012 so far, which I found on your website at www.therealbits.com.
To be fair, I didn't include it in the show last week.
No, that's true. I did it on the site. He says, I understand that everyone has the right to voice their opinion on the internet, but with Rock of Ages on behalf of the internet, I ask you keep your opinion on this particular film to yourself.
Yeah.
Sincerely, Mike from Canada. P.S. Hi, Josh and Dave. Thank you, Mike.
You know what? I think that Mike stopped believing. He never held on to that feeling. You know, it's just a small town girl living in a lonely world. That's all I am.
All right, enough. Please,
Mike, right. just take the midnight train going anywhere.
All right. Now, with that being said, let's do a list of five.
That's right.
I'm going to get a pen here so I can keep track of everyone, because otherwise Josh yells at me. And and I'm going to say...
It's never out of malice, David. Oh,
no, I know. I'm just going to try and keep track of it, though. Okay, here we go. So we will start with... our list this week is our five favorite villains, because a hero is only as good as his villains, and here are five of our favorites. Now, we're going to start with Josh, number five.
Oh, number five. Sorry, I have my list. It's just behind another thing. There we are. Okay, number five on my list is Max Cody from Cape Fear.
Oh, good choice.
And because you're obviously going to ask.
I was about to.
Everybody hates me for this. Dave, if you didn't ask, I would be insulted.
The remake or original? No,
it's De Niro. For me, it's always De Niro. Man.
I agree with you.
Sorry?
I agree with you.
Oh, thank crap.
No, I think De Niro is fantastic. I think he's just evil.
I think I watched it again recently, man, just because I have a copy of it now. And it's that, for me, it's the scene with him when he takes home the very drunk, inebriated mistress.
Oh, yes.
Friend. And that scene, I was like, this guy is terrifying.
Let's just say it was a little bit cheeky. And yeah. No, that he is terrifying. And look, that's not to take anything away from Robert Mitchum. The original Max Cady was also fantastic, but it was a very different character. Yeah. He was almost slimy and sexual in a way, whereas De Niro is just psychotic.
Yeah, and I think the psychotic is what really makes it sell as a great villain, because you just look at it and it's like he puts... the thing that I loved about this particular one is that he puts his hero character into places that almost take away that one thing that he's got of being a hero. And that's what makes him such an interesting character. His aim is to bring the hero character down, which is why he deserves a position on the list.
Absolutely. Very good choice. Richard, number five.
Number five had to be Scar from The Lion King.
Ah, are you going all animated?
No, and I'm not going all animated.
I was about to say, almost could have.
I could have all gone all Disney, but I love Scar, because Jeremy Irons' voice behind that, of course. But of course you are. You know, that really kind of, he's got that, but he is the classic villain. You know, he is, he kills, which is rare for a Disney film, you know. He takes the throne, he almost destroys the kingdom, but as Josh pointed out, he gives the hero something really true to fight against, and it makes the hero's triumph all the more meaning. Cool.
I agree completely. No, it's a fantastic choice. My number five is I wanted a James Bond villain, and I had to weigh it up. I'm going, who? Of course, it's Blofeld, blah, blah. But it really came down to the fact that I had to go with, no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. I had to go with Goldfinger, because I think he is just lovely as a villain. He just relishes in the role. And I had a lot of fun watching him, and it's actually the oldest of all my villains.
I've got a Bond villain on my list too, and I had a couple to choose from. That was one of them.
Yes.
I also almost chose Scaramanga from The Man with the Golden Gun.
He was on my list as well, yes.
just for the line, because they used it in The Trip with Steve Coogan and Rob Bright, and try to outdo the line with each other, which is, "Come, come, Mr. Bond, you disappoint me. You have as much fulfillment out of killing as I do."
Yes. I also almost put in Drax from Moonraker, because he had such a gleeful evil.
wait till we get to mine.
So. All right, wait till we get to yours. All right, so our number four is on the list. Josh.
I'm four. My number four is, I wanted to put this so much higher. I really did. But the Terminator from Terminator.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, as far as villains go, I mean, to make yours unstoppable, essentially, is a great way to make a really terrifying villain, is essentially make it just something that just won't stop coming after you.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about Terminator 1, yeah?
Terminator 1, yes.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I agree.
No, where he's at is most terrifying. Like, 2, I mean, even if you look at the Liquidator, I mean, he's still, in some ways, kind of campy, whereas that...
He's slashing prices!
He's gone mad, and he's...
Oh, that's awesome.
Moving right along.
Richard, you're number four.
My number four is the Kurgan from Highlander.
Oh, yes.
Because it's better to burn out than to fade away. I love it. I love Clancy
Ramirez.
Brown.
Ramirez!
I took his head and raped your woman. Which is good. He didn't do that the other way around. He's a great villain because he's so evil the whole way through.
There is not a nice part to him.
There is no gray area for this guy. He is as black can be. You know, he's evil. He takes people's heads off, and he pretty much the only thing the hero has to do is beat him. That's the main thing for the whole film. And Clancy Brown is fantastic. I mean, the dude's got like his neck being held together with safety pins by the end of the film. You know, that's how badass this guy is, and he's just shaved off half of his head to blend in.
Nah, he's brilliant. He's brilliant. Yeah, but I think we should have a party, though, with the Kurgan and the Liquidator.
He's slashing heads. No, but I love it. But Clancy Brown has played so many villains over the years, too. I mean, he played it in a TV show called Carnival. He's always got that villain voice, you know.
He does, and let's not forget Mr. Krabs. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. but it's marvelous. One of my favorite films ever, too.
All right. You know they're remaking it with Ryan Reynolds. Yeah, there's a thought for you.
There can be any one, David.
There can be only one. All right. My number four. Now, this is going to seem really weird that it's this low, but my number four is Darth Vader from The Empire Strikes Back.
It's low.
Yeah. Oh, sorry? It is low, but there's some good stuff coming. But I think out of the three Star Wars films, Darth Vader is best in The Empire Strikes Back. Yeah. So it's where he really came into his own. He was just the evil henchman in the first one. But in the second one, he was Lord Vader. Number three, Josh?
Number three is surprising considering it's not a film that I love. But the funny thing is I've gone back to this film and watched just the scenes with this particular character in it because... For some weird reason, even after not liking the film, when people describe the word villain, this name comes to mind almost immediately, which is Hans Landa from Inglourious Basterds.
Yes,
and
good
as
choice.
Far as terrifying people go, this guy is right up there.
Oh, the first 40 minutes of that film.
The first 40 minutes, that's just the setup. And then from there, he just like gets creepier and more terrifying as it goes along. And that's why I just freaking loved him as a character.
He's fantastic. He's well deserved the Oscar for that film. Amazing performance. No, he's fantastic. And I can't wait till Django Unchained just for him.
Yep.
To see what he does with it.
Yes, exactly. I want to see him get a role that I'm actually going to care about him in.
Yeah, because that being said, he was the best thing in Green Hornet.
Yes, but that's the problem.
You know, he keeps doing films like that, he's going to sink his career. Richard, number three.
Number three might be an odd choice, but it's Steph, who was played by, what was the name of the actor? I've forgotten already. James Spader in Pretty in Pink.
Oh!
Oh, wow.
Now, this is a really odd choice.
I'm sitting there thinking, Steph? James Spader? Yeah. Which film could it possibly be?
This dude was like the epitome of 80s yuppiness, you know, and he was almost like if he was in an older movie, he would have been had a mustache that he would have been twirling. You know, he's kind of like he's the guy that he wants Molly Ringwald all throughout the film, and he comes but he comes from money, and so he opposes her union with Andrew McCarthy.
Yep.
So he opposes the union, and he's just spouting all these like really really classy lines like. If you've got a hard on for trash, don't take care of it around us. I just love him because he's just like completely 80s yuppie. Like he's like the teenage Gordon Gekko.
He's fantastic. Yeah. I haven't seen that film in ages. I've got to watch that film again. I went through a big John Hughes push last year, actually. And I did get the Pretty in Pink. No, I didn't. I got the 16 Candles. Sixteen.
It's
candles.
Basically the same.
She's got her boobies. all right, number three for me has got to be the Joker from The Dark Knight. I think Heath Ledger is just phenomenal in the role, and I can understand why filmmakers would be afraid to ever try and tackle that character again because it'll always be compared to him. Mm. And I thought he was just absolutely mesmerizing on the screen. But there's better to come. Number two, Josh.
My number two is Anton Chigurh.
Oh, yes.
For Old Men. Now, I think the scene that just immediately made this work so intensely for me is the scene where he first gets captured by the police.
Yep.
And there's that amazing thing that kicks in almost immediately where he just strangles this dude to death. And the look on his face is absolutely amazing. It's just this pure, unrequited, just psychoticness like I've never seen in a character before.
Yes. I also love, and it's a scene they showed ad nauseum leading up to the film, they kept showing clips from, which is the scene with the flipping of the coin in the gas station. Which I find so tense because you just don't know what he's going to do. Mm. And it's an amazing sequel. He's a fantastic character. Yeah, well, you're picking the Oscar winners today, aren't you?
Oh, man, seriously, dude. In my life, it's funny you say that. Anyway.
All right, Richard, and number two.
My number two is the Bond villain. It's Ernst Blofeld.
Oh, yes.
Now, which very one, though? Yes, very specific Ernst Blofeld. It's Donald Pleasance from You Only Live Twice.
Okay, fair enough. I can accept that.
reasons.
I mean,
interested.
He's, he's been, there was Anthony Dawson also played him. Telly Savalas played him on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yep.
But I don't know. What was that?
Who loves you, baby?
Who loves you, baby?
It was Donald Pleasance who was the Blofeld who almost strangled his cat in that one scene.
Yes, I think so. And he's holding on to him. But he's got great lines like, I shall look forward to personally to exterminating you, Mr. Bond. And kill Bond now.
Blofeld was such a great character. You could almost have anybody play him because he was just such a wonderful character. And of course, this is where Dr. Evil comes from. I mean, the whole send-up of that is just brilliant as well. But I think he's just such a classic spy villain. Wonderful stuff.
I loved it. One of his lines here, I was just looking up his dialogue, was, "You made a mistake, my friend. No astronaut would enter the capsule carrying his air conditioner." Just imagine that while stroking a cat.
Yes, absolutely. My number two, I wouldn't be a geek if I didn't have a Star Trek moment in here, and it's got to be Khan! Because you gotta have Khan on a list like this, because from hell's heart he spits at thee.
Dude, it was on my list right up until like the last 10 minutes before the show.
I actually almost put Borg Queen after watching First Contact again because she is awesome, but no, Khan is the Star Trek villain of Star Trek villains. He is just fantastic. Right, lightning round of ones. Josh.
All right. My number one is the character that will, for me, always be the perfect and most well-acted villain of all time, which is Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, good choice.
Because you have a character that someone's essentially sat down and went, if I wanted to take the psychosis out of psychosis and make somebody that's so grounded and so casual that it becomes evil in itself, then there's no other character that's ever done it as well as he has.
Yeah,
Hannibal Lecter will live on until someone can create a character that is as menacing without doing anything as this man can. This man can talk about classical music and just have you in a sense of terror, looking like the girl from The Ring. And just creepy, man.
Fantastic choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, very, very good. You want to know something? Funnily enough, didn't even occur to me.
Yeah, but you know, it's that horror fan, man. That's why you keep me around.
I know. I'm so glad
I did.
Is
that why we keep you around?
Richard, you're number
one.
It's
not like I'm useful for anything else. It's not like I know anything about comic books.
Except you've been picking all the Oscar winners tonight.
That's true. I want to borrow your list, Josh. I think it's better than mine.
Richard, you're number one, please.
Okay, if you just indulge me for a brief second, my number one has appeared in a few different forms. During the rectification of the Valdrani, it appeared in the form of a large moving torg.
Pardon?
Bear with me. During the third reconciliation of the last of the McKittrick supplements, they chose a new form for him, that of the giant Slaw.
I know where you're going.
Now, many shoves and souls knew what it was like to be roasted in the depths of the Slaw that day, I can tell you. This is, of course, Gozer. Or as we know him,
it's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Gozer the Gozerian.
Gozer the Gozerian. He was Zool was his minion. Zool was the minion of Gozer. Gozer, you know, almost destroyed New York. And were it not for a last-minute crossing of the streams, he could have gotten away with it.
And all
also,
I have to say to that is,
he had
what
the
did
good
you
taste
do, Ray?
Yeah. Also, he managed to conjure up a 50-foot marshmallow man in the blink of an eye.
Well played, sir.
So,
but can I throw my number one at you?
I suppose so. We've waited this long.
My number one is, ladies and gentlemen, have no illusions. We are in charge. It's got to be Hans Gruber from Die Hard.
You know, I took it off, Dave, because I knew it was going to be on yours.
My favorite all-time bad guy.
Oh, that's good.
And so I had to put him. He was when this list first got conceived, I just went, number one, Hans Gruber. Let's build the rest of the list. I love Hans Gruber. I think Alan Rickman has never been finer. In my opinion, I think he just does such a good job.
It's one of those amazing character concepts where it's like, even today, it never gets camp.
No.
Because he plays it so dead straight.
Absolutely. When he goes, Armani, he goes, I have two of those myself. Now I have a machine gun. Ho. I love him. I think he's fabulous. All right, that's our list, people. Have you got any runners up, Richard?
I mentioned one of them before, which was Scaramanga from Man with the Golden Gun.
Very good, very good. I didn't put any runners up this time. I thought I'm going to keep it nice and simple this time. Okay, there's a list for you, people. Go out and watch those movies. Put those in your pipe and smoke them. Anything to add, gentlemen, before we wrap this thing up?
I guess not, no.
Boy, that was a rousing silence.
I swear to God, I was actually thinking that. I was like, no, I'm good.
What a rousing silence. In that case, I will end the show with a public service announcement. We've already talked about this on Behind the Panels, but I'll bring it up here.
Can you put some music in behind here, like right now? Because that would just be really cool.
I could. Oh, yeah, just like a little bit of elevator music.
Yeah.
So we got like this.
Spice it up a little bit.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Okay, so just to let you know, there is no show next week. There's no shows next week.
I didn't actually think you were going to put it in live. It's fantastic.
All right, so no shows next week because we have been a long-planned update and upgrade to our site. And it's just... I can't do it with this music in the background. I'll keep it going. Hold on. I'll keep it going. So.
Okay. All right. 3, 2, 1.
The problem that we have with updating the site is we have to close the site, obviously, to go in and do work in the back end of the site. Well, that sounds terrible. But anyway, so the problem we have is that the feeds also close down. And every weekend we go, we're going to do this, finally do this upgrade that we've been promising. But then we release a new show and we go, we can't close the site because the feed has just gone out. And you can see this revolving circle of a problem that we have. So next week there is no major film coming out. Yay! So what we're going to do is we're going to close the site for about 2 days, about 48 hours from... Richard, you've got the date for me. What was it? It was Sunday what?
Saturday the 14th of July... The year of our Lord 2012.
Thank you very much. Yes, that's good. It's going to be closing about 6 or 7 p.m. Saturday. We'll reopen on Tuesday at some stage when it's finished. And it'll be the all new site and it'll be fantastic and spectacular and all that will be wonderful. And of course, we come back strong with the Dark Knight Rises. So
this is getting so ridiculous. Can we please turn the music off?
You asked for
this
it,
is,
man.
This is the most elevated version of the song I've ever heard.
It's the one we used to play live all the time. It's fantastic.
Xylophones and stuff. I can't concentrate with this song. I'm too relaxed.
Now, can I point out? I'll turn it off there. There we go. Can I point out that the... oh, shit. Ellen, go away.
You can't stop it.
I can't stop it.
You've opened the door. There's no way of stopping it now. It'll take us all in the night.
Yeah. All right. So, now, Josh, do you remember when we used to go out live all those months ago?
Yes.
There was one day where we used to play that music, if you remember, at the break between shows.
And was that the time we like took off for like an hour and just left it running?
It was on loop for about 20 minutes. We came back in the chat room like, please make it stop.
Well, we just tickled their funny bones a little bit, I would imagine. Hey, guys. We haven't forgotten about you.
All right. So anyway, back to the... Seriousness of this.
Serious, Dave. Serious. Hi. Come on.
Okay. Whew. Straight face.
That was like
straight
a really face. Long-winded way of saying there's no show next week.
There's no shows next week because the site's going to be down. So if you go to the site and you find it's down, don't panic. We haven't gone anywhere. We're just doing a long-awaited restoration of our site or rebuilding of our site. That being said, we will be back the following week with Dark Knight Rises. Okay, so that gets that out of the way. Richard, where can people find more of you on the internet?
I think I need some music for this, actually, now. You can find me at therealbits.com. That's the RELLBits.com or on Twitter at DVDBits.
God damn it. I knew you'd do that. Fine. Keep going.
Josh, where can people find more of you on the internet?
You can find me over at rawdlc.com. It's a gaming website full of all sorts of crazy gaming stuff. I just had to say it like that. The music in the background just made it work.
All right, let's get rid of that from my
Who
plug.
Are you, Dave?
Ah, you can find me at geekactually.com, just not next weekend.
And why is that, Dave?
Because I'm closing the site for a few days. Hang on, I better bring the music back up.
Shut up! All right. Please let me go.
We've got to let you go to dinner, don't we? I forgot. All right, so you can find me at geekactually.com or at what's that thing called again? Twitter, at David McVeigh. Now, we open the show with a clip from Spider-Man, the original Raimi film, and we're closing the show...
We're going out with the girl from Ipanema.
Why not? I was going to go out with some of Danny Elfman's Spider-Man music, but we've had a request, so... So we're going out with the girl from Ipanema, apparently. Right. Have you guys got anything to add to this wildly inappropriate ending to the show?
I think we need a 2-week break.
And just be fair with us, at the end of the music, there is actually the little geek coming in to tell us about what he thought of Spider-Man. Hopefully I'll have regained my composure by then. In the meantime, I'm going to say thank you, guys. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you, audience. We'll see you in 2 weeks and go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And here's the girl from Ipanema. Welcome back. We are joined now by Nicholas McVeigh, the little geek, who has joined us, as he does on films that are kind of aimed at his age bracket and so forth, for his opinions on The Amazing Spider-Man. Nicholas, welcome back.
Thank Thank you. Hi.
Hi. And what did you think of The Amazing Spider-Man?
I actually really liked it.
Yeah? I think yeah. you actually liked it more than me, didn't you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You had the, I remember, because I saw it in a preview, you came back from seeing it, and you were like, I think you're nuts, Dad.
Yeah, I think you were, actually.
Yeah? So which one do you like better? Do you like Sam Raimi's, or do you like the new one?
Well, it's hard to decide. I definitely better than Spider-Man 3, but...
well, that's not hard. Come on, let's raise the bench post a little bit higher.
I don't know. I really like Spider-Man 2, though, and I do like Spider-Man 1 as well.
Yeah? Okay, so which one do you like? Spider-Man 1, Spider-Man 2, which one?
Spider-Man 2, probably.
Spider-Man 2?
Better.
And how does The Amazing Spider-Man rate to Spider-Man 2?
Maybe not as good, but still pretty good, I think.
All right, so what is it about The Amazing Spider-Man that you liked?
I like the new direction they took of it, actually. Yeah? I liked how it was like, I like how they didn't like just, you know, go straight to college or something. I like how they took their time with the origin story. I liked,
And what did you think of Andrew Garfield?
I thought Andrew Garfield was really good. Yeah? I thought he's better than Tobey Maguire.
Oh, big words, big words. You liked him better, did you? Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I actually really liked Andrew Garfield. I thought he was really good. And Gwen Stacy?
I thought she was better than, what's her name?
Kristen Dunst.
I forgot her name already.
Yeah, look, I kind of agree with you because I actually really liked the Mary Jane Watson character in the comic books, but I never thought Kristen Dunst was the right actress to play Mary Jane Watson. That's the biggest problem.
Yeah, I actually read the comic books after the film, so I'm not... But still, I thought she's better in the comics as well.
Yeah, whereas I think Emma Stone is fantastic as Gwen Stacy.
Yeah.
So I think she is far better casting than Kirsten... What's her name? Kirsten Dunst?
Dunst.
As Mary Jane. Yeah. All right, Lizard?
It was all right.
He was all right.
Yeah, he was okay.
Just okay?
Kurt Connors was good, but, like, the Lizard wasn't, like, in it till, like, halfway through the movie.
But when he makes his appearance, how is he?
Oh, the CGI is great for him.
Okay.
But I don't... He's, like, it's more focused on Peter, so it's kind of like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like...
And what about...
What
about visually 3D? Stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, 3D's great. I love the web swinging, too. I love the, it's a very, I like, it's different than the other movie. It's, I also, of course, like the web shooters.
Yeah. I like the fact that we went back to mechanical web shooters. I think that's fantastic.
It just, the webbing that just buys is kind of weird, but yeah.
Well, you don't like the mail order webbing?
No. No. But other than that, yeah, it's pretty good.
Fair enough.
And he was supposed to be a genius. It makes him seem dumb.
I know. He should have been making his own webs. There's actually that one shot I really like where...
Oh, sorry, spoiler zone.
Where he's down the center of the crane, and he fires the two webs out, stretches out, and fires himself down the crane like a cannon.
I love the, parkour jumping and everything. That was, really good.
Yeah, a fantastic use of locations and what he can do with it. Anything negative about the film?
Not really. I don't find that, like, you said, like, he kind of miraculously turns into Spider-Man. I don't find that. I think he was good building up to it because he first had, you know, the red mask. Sorry, spoilers again. He first had, like, the red mask.
Yeah.
And then he's slowly getting the suit and everything. I think it's building quite well.
I just found that once he decided to be the superhero, it all happened very, very quickly. But that's a personal thing. I mean, a lot of people disagree with me, but that's all right.
And also, I didn't go into it thinking, like, oh, Sam Raimi did that, or Sam Raimi did this before. I didn't feel...
I had that constant feeling of deja vu all the way through it.
Well, I guess, I don't know, I just, like, I'm kind of, like, distincting them. I'm not saying... I don't know how to explain.
You're trying to make each one individual on its own, right?
Yeah, so it's almost like, I don't know, let's say in movie universe, this is Ultimate Spider-Man or something.
Oh, I see how you're doing it. Okay, yeah.
So it's
okay,
like a different universe.
Like a different universe and it's starting all over. Yeah. Well, I can see that in a way, I guess. I just think it's too soon. For me, it was too soon. I just feel like 9-10 years and 19 years to do a remake isn't anything new. I mean, we rebooted Incredible Hulk in shorter time than that, but we took it in such a different direction that it wasn't like the same thing. But by going back and doing a reboot of the origin all over again, it's like we're just kind of retreading the same territory. Whereas I think if they could have rebooted it just by going, okay, he's already Spider-Man, let's just go. You know?
Yeah, but I like the establishing before that with because now it's a completely different character. You can't.
Yeah, I guess
it's hard to do that. I don't know. It's like,
I guess. I don't know. There's something about the film that just sits a little awkward with me, and maybe we'll shake that by the time the second one comes along. But at the moment, it just feels a little bit awkward still.
Yeah, I'm waiting to find out who the guy at the end is.
Yeah, well, that whole ending sequence, we won't spoil it here because we're not in a spoiler zone, but that whole closing title sequence was just odd. I'm not sure. For those who are in the audience, you can stay to the end of the credits, of course. It's actually not even the end. It's the middle of the credits.
Middle.
There's a middle.
Of course, everyone started to leave.
Yeah, there's a mid-credit final sequence you can have a look at, but which I just didn't understand.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody understood.
I don't really understand. First, I thought it was Norman Osborn.
Might have been just him talking to himself. It might have been something. I don't know. That's the problem. It's completely weird.
But then I guess I didn't see the part that he just disappeared. But I thought he just went into the shadows or something.
He just kind of vanished. I don't know. Watch the film and write to us at feedback@filmactually.com and you can let us know what you think. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add?
I don't know.
No? Okay.
Not really.
So in that case, tell us a little bit where people can find out more about you.
Oh, aren't you going to ask me if I recommend this film?
No. I think we gather the fact that you recommend this film.
Would you recommend
this film to your friends?
Yes, I would, definitely.
That's what I thought.
I actually think half my friends have seen it already.
Right, fair enough. Because, look, the fact that you really liked it kind of tells me that you're going to recommend this film.
Yeah,
so.
I did. I liked it.
I don't think there was any doubt in my mind that this was going to be a recommendation to your friends. But where can people find more of you on the internet?
What am I talking
about? YouTube?
YouTube.com/ Nikki McVeigh.
Yeah, fair enough. And what's new?
I've always releasing new trailer clips.
Yep.
Well, not always, but at the moment I have.
Yep.
I'm also releasing soon a new Batman short.
Yeah, and I had to get in there and do my Batman voice again, so we'll see a little bit more of that.
But
so,
it's not as long as Smiles.
No, but that's coming soon, and there's also something else on the horizon, yeah?
Oh, yeah, it's not that special. It's like Superman. He's going to fly or something, yeah.
You're going to make him fly?
Yeah, I'm going
to
make him fly.
I'm curious to see how you're going to do it, so we'll look forward to that. So go to youtube.com/ Nikki McVeigh. Find out more of his films. Your new website is up now as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but I haven't put anything on it.
No, it's okay. So just let people know where it is because that way they'll know for the future. But that's NikkiMcVeigh.com. And that's just going up now. So don't be looking for a lot of content there.
Yeah.
But, it is. It's a new WordPress site that's going up. So you'll have some stuff on there soon too. Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Yep.
Anything else? You saw Brave. Did you want to just throw out a quick one on Brave?
I think I liked them more than Richard or Josh.
Yeah, I think you did too.
I agree with the whole there's no bad guy or anything, but I thought it was better than what they said.
Fair enough. No, that's fair. So if you were going to recommend Brave, would you recommend that to your friends?
Yeah, I'd recommend it.
Yeah, so their complaints were that it didn't have a strong enough narrative, it didn't have a proper bad guy, just overall just felt a little bit weak for Pixar.
Yeah, I know. I can feel that, but it's like I guess I wasn't thinking about Pixar when I watched it.
You just had a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how I was feeling, and I said that in my review as well. I actually had more fun with it than they did, purely because I just felt like it was just a fun ride. It wasn't up to the quality of Pixar usually, but it was a fun ride.
Oh, and I liked the short in the beginning as well.
Shorts are always good, though. Pixar's always good at their shorts.
Also, another thing about The Amazing Spider-Man, I'm sorry, I think we kind of ended that, but I don't know what they're going to do about the relationship of Gwen and Peter Parker, because it's really different in the comic books. I've actually read those comics, and
we had a discussion about this on the main show as well, where we're looking at going, if they're going to follow that storyline to its ultimate conclusion, they've kind of messed with it now, so I'm not sure if it works. They might be going in a different direction with it, though. So.
Yeah, but yeah, I'd actually want to see the other direction. Unlike someone next to me.
Yeah, stop pointing at me.
next to me. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, no, look, I think at this point we have to just take the sequels and the Spider-Man films on their own merits.
I have like an open mind.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
You have an open mind as opposed to my closed mind. Is that
what
you're saying?
Yeah,
I'm just an old geek. What can I do? I miss my stuff. My stories, man. They're my stories.
You have the comic books, though.
I do. I always have my comic books.
Yep.
Nicholas, thank you for joining me.
No problem.
We'll see you at the next one, which I imagine will be The Dark Knight Rises.
Yep. I actually can't wait now.
See you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.